Sai Ram listeners, welcome to Radio Sai Answering Booth, and this is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai. Radio Sai Answering Booth is a show where we invite questions from all of you on practical applications of Swami's message, and I, with prayers to Swami, will provide answers based on Swami's message, of course. My heartfelt Navratri greetings to all of you. It's one of the most important and auspicious festivals. So I pray that Swami blesses all of us with resilience, undeterred focus and immense love for Him, so we may progress steadily on our journey to the ultimate. As it is the festival of Navratri, why not start the program with a quote about Navratri? So here is one from one of Swami's Dashara discourses. Swami says, Durga, Lakshmi and Saraswati represent three kinds of potencies in man. Willpower, that is Ichha Shakti, the power of purposeful action or Kriya Shakti, and the power of knowledge or Jnana Shakti. These 10 days of Navratri festival convert your willpower into a yearning for God. Convert purposeful action or Kriya Shakti into a force for divine actions. Convert your power of knowledge or Jnana Shakti into the divine itself. So that's the quote from one of Swami's Dashara discourses, and that's a beautiful message for all of us. And the essence of that is, it all starts with sublimation of our desires, thoughts and actions. Forget about being desireless or thoughtless. Start by having more desires for God and God's love. Replace as many thoughts as we can with thoughts of Swami. I always find it easy if we can take a message of Swami and find in it some points we can immediately try to put to practice. And that's why I find that quote quite apt and useful, so I thought I will share it with all of you. Let us then head to the questions for the week, dear listeners. We have two as usual. One is the last question of a listener who sent us a set of questions, but we will come to that question a little later in the program. The first question is from Miss Mohini. I don't know from where she is writing to us. It's a short note. It's a short one, so I will myself read it out. So here is Sister Mohini's question. Does our intense desire for liberation invite misery on that account? When our thirst for truth is intense, we wish to progress at any cost. This indeed brings results, but this I think can bring more misery due to the fact that harder experiences are required to scale higher peaks at a quick pace. Maybe this is what is misinterpreted by religions as trials from God. Kindly throw some light on this. Thank you, Sister Mohini. I know that's not really a question pertaining to any situation in life or a practical problem, but it's a question that many people who take to the spiritual path have in their mind. So I thought I'll take it up in this program. So taking to the spiritual path, do we have to be prepared for more troubles? Will life become more difficult? The answer is yes and no. I know that answer will make no sense for you right now. Let me try explaining by telling two stories or analogies that Swami had told a devotee once, and this devotee himself happened to share it with a few of us. This devotee had asked Swami once this very same question that the listener has asked us, but a little differently though. He asked, Swami, is it that everyone who comes to Swami has to suffer? Right? In reply to this, Swami told him this story. There was a man who had persistent cough and cold. His friend told him that, you know what, I know a very good doctor. The last time I was unwell, he cured me in no time. So come with me, I'll take you to his hospital. So both of them head to the hospital and go into the doctor's chamber. The doctor is gone for his rounds in the morning, so this friend tells him, I'll go get the doctor, you wait here. And this man with his cough and cold, impatient as he is, starts walking around the wards. Okay, so there he sees a patient who's completely bandaged from head to toe. His hand is suspended from one stand, one leg is hanging on the other side. Seeing this, the man gets a bit scared. So he turns to the nurse in the ward and asks her, why is this man like this? And apparently that nurse has been having a bad day. So she replied in irritation, saying, yes, yes, this doctor bandages up whoever comes to him like this. And this man starts thinking, oh God, what if I am also to be tied up like this now? So he silently leaves even before his friend and the doctor can come. Swami then explained how stupid it is of that man. A doctor treats a patient according to the ailment, For the cough that man had, he would have got some pills or some simple medication. How absurd of him to see another patient who needed that treatment and think that he too will get the same treatment. Swami would say, same way, not necessarily all will undergo the same tough experiences after coming to Swami, or in the context of this question, after taking to a spiritual life. But the next analogy makes it a bit more clear. Swami was saying, let's say that you wish to go to the Himalayas. If you go to Shimla, you can stay in a 5-star hotel, let's say. You will have warm rooms, hot water, and all the luxuries you can think of. Say you want to go a little higher up, and so you go to Manali. There you may get a room with comforts, or you may not. You may have to put up with more hardships, let's say. To give you the context, you know, Swami was giving this analogy in the year 1960, so I'm sure Manali and such hill stations were quite different then. Finally, Swami said, say you're really adventurous and you choose to go to Mount Everest. That too is part of the same Himalayas. But if you wish to go there, you cannot expect any comfort, isn't it? In fact, only a small percentage of people are successful in that attempt itself. Swami explained, see, all three places are in the Himalayas, but depending on how much higher you wish to go, you must be prepared for greater hardships. There are two things we can draw from this one. One is, each person's journey will be unique. It's very difficult to say that all will suffer the same way or undergo the same experiences. The second is, yes, as we go higher, the challenges will be more, and it is quite obvious too. I'll first speak a little about the second point, because I think that is an aspect that is quite logical and closer to our understanding. One of my seniors in college would say this when we were students, especially when we used to be struggling through the exam season. He would say, for after all a BSc degree, we are ready to slog so much. When we want a PhD, we are ready to slog for 5 years working for hours in the laboratory each day. If we want God's grace, if we want liberation, shouldn't be prepared to go through much, much more hardships and challenges and put in more effort? So dear listeners, forget spirituality, even in worldly life, this is the order. Higher we wish to go, tougher it gets, and we know it and accept it, right? So is it with spirituality too? But the beauty is, once that spiritual aspiration has set in, you will not be satisfied with worldly comforts and successes. This is human nature. We all seek happiness, right? The lowest level is to seek happiness in pleasures of life. Swami says that this is the animal nature. Then there is happiness that comes from success, name and fame. And to earn this happiness, we are ready to sacrifice some of our pleasures, right? We are ready to forego food and sleep and work harder. Even this is a lower level of happiness. The truest happiness comes from meaning and purpose. So at some point in this life, or some future life at least, every individual will move towards this true happiness. And when that happens, one cannot stay satisfied with the happiness that comes from pleasure and name and fame and all of that. And then we will be ready to take on challenges to go higher. But why should we have more troubles as we rise higher in spirituality at all? I'll try to answer that now, but my answer, I should tell you, is not going to be too comprehensive. There may be many, many factors, but I'll just discuss those few points which will give us a better idea. Firstly, let us understand that almost all that we suffer is a result of our own karmic consequences. So whether a person is spiritual or worldly, one has to reap what one sows. Swami would often say this, that this world is perfect in terms of reflection, reaction and resound. Be it good or bad, what you do comes back to you. Good for good and bad for bad. They don't cancel each other out. Now consider the example of someone who has transformed and taken to a spiritual path. Say someone like Valmiki or Angulimala, or there is an incident that happened in Uganda. You know, Swami transformed an armed terrorist who was about to kill a Swami's devotee, Dr. Gadia. This terrorist later became a renunciant. The point I'm trying to make is, now all these people have done crimes of killing and looting people. But a point came in their life because of which they gave up the evil ways and became noble. But the bad karma accumulated will not simply vanish. They will have to undergo the consequences, isn't it? Let us say we don't know about their past and we come to know of such individuals from after their transformation. Just imagine what we will notice. Here is someone who is such a saintly person, keeps doing only good and helping others. But only bad things keep happening in their life. So sometimes, if it is the case of a person who is transformed from evil ways, it may appear that they are spiritual people and they are suffering more than a normal person. But the fact is, there is no such thing. But most times, even bad karma being faced will be used to the benefit in the spiritual journey if the aspirant is sincere. Let me give you a very, very simplistic example. Say I'm giving my 12th exam and I've been very, very irresponsible throughout the year and I've whiled away my time and I eventually failed the year. And let's say that I am a student who usually scores around the 60% mark. But because of my carelessness, I fail. Now the consequences of this is I need to take the exam again. At this point, say I have learned my lesson and make up my mind not to repeat this mistake. I will show that resolve in my hard work, won't I? And this time when I take my exam, let's say that I pass with 90% marks because of that sincere effort that I put in. So though I had to face the bad consequences, sincere repentance and acceptance of my mistake will make me benefit from the bad karma too. Similarly, when we are sincere now, serious about spiritual progress now, even the bad karma from the past can be used as a stepping stone towards our journey's goal. What role does God's grace have then? That's the question which comes next. In what way can it help us out of bad karma? Swami says, sometimes God can make us go through our karma without feeling the sting of it. So many times when we look at a devotee from the outside, we may think that he or she is suffering. But in reality, the devotee may be blissfully untouched by the problem he or she is going through. Who knows, someone like Prahlada may not have felt anything that was done to him, right? The Pandavas might have had few times when they cursed their situation, but for most part, they may have spent it blissfully knowing Krishna knows what's best. That's because, as I said earlier, just like the desire for worldly success and fame makes us accept some discomfort, the feeling of purpose makes us accept discomforts, pain, and even infamy and failure. The thought that Swami is in control, Swami has some reason to put me through this, will give us a much higher sense of purpose. So one main reason why we undergo pain after turning to spirituality may just be our bad karmas of the past. But there can be a possibility that God sends us more troubles our way when we choose to go higher in the quest for liberation too. But now, is there a reason why we should face more problems in the spiritual path? Understanding this, I feel, will also tell us how Swami uses our own karma to help us rise higher. I think I mentioned this before, as we rise higher in spirituality, the more our happiness will become independent of factors outside. For example, now if I have to be happy, I should have no financial problems, I should have no relationship crisis, people around me should respect me, and so many such factors outside have to be perfect. And all through life, we try to maintain all these things stable so we can be happy. But one of the features of spiritual progress is, my happiness will not depend on these factors outside. I will still strive to have a good name, good relationships, and even earn money. But my happiness will not depend on these things outside. Why? Because in spiritual journey, we are moving from happiness to bliss, or what we call ananda. And Swami very, very beautifully defined bliss once when explaining this to a student. He said, bliss is causeless happiness. It will not be bliss because my pocket is full or because I have 100 friends on my Facebook account or I'm famous. My bliss will come from within and there will be no cause or reason for it. Okay, so why should we have more problems then? We've not answered that question completely still. When we want to teach kids to learn to ride a bicycle, let's say, sometimes we give them a bicycle with two small supporting wheels. We call them the training wheels. When kids keep riding such a cycle, even without their knowledge, they will learn the art of balancing. But they will not realize this sometimes. One fine day, you just take those training wheels away, and when they ride, they will know that, they will themselves realize that they've learned to balance. Similarly, sometimes Swami will fiercely snatch away some of these things, money, fame, friends. At that moment, it will seem cruel. But we will slowly realize that we now actually have a sense of peace and happiness that is independent of these factors. So pain is an essential step, and many times it is to show to us that we are progressing, that is, you know, that we are progressing along the path. That is when we have grown. If we have not grown, the pain is an indication that spiritual lessons are yet to sink in and we can work on it. Just like failing in an exam shows you which subjects you are weak in, as I gave that example. So troubles come to a spiritual aspirant either to show to him or her that there is progress or to show where the weakness lies. There's one more reason I would like to mention, and I will probably end with that. As I explained, we are all in this journey of moving from normal pleasure to achievements to true bliss, which comes out of achieving the purpose of life, right? But in the spiritual path, we don't move in clear-cut stages. It's not like after doing meditation for 20 years, you graduate from hunger. After 25 years, you graduate from sensual desires. After 30 years, money has no value for you. We don't progress in quantum stages like that. As we saw in the analogy I started with, each of us are so different. So even as we are progressing, we sometimes don't outgrow our vasanas so easily. So there is always the temptation of falling back to the easier life. It is quite natural for us to think, why choose spirituality and suffer like this? Let's go back to chasing worldly dreams, especially when we are hit by pain and frustration. Some troubles come to us to remind us that there is no happiness in the world. When our vairagyam or detachment from the world wobbles a bit, a situation may come that strengthens our vairagyam and makes us turn to God more intensely. Let's say at some point after you take to the spiritual path, the mind starts tempting you into earning money. Tells you, what can spiritual progress give? Why not just go and earn some more money? A problem will come that will show us that all the money that you have cannot save you. Suddenly you will realize how valueless money is, and the idea of spending one's life in earning money is such an absurd idea. I'm sure this many of us have observed in our own lives, especially in our journey with Swami. So let me try and sum up whatever I've said as an answer to that question. As we go higher, we will face more challenges. That is the order with everything, spiritual and worldly. But most of the time, the pain or trouble we undergo is because of our own past actions. But when we turn to God or turn to a spiritual path, which I feel is the same, the troubles we face can help us go higher. How do troubles help us? One, it shows us that we are growing and our happiness does not depend on what it used to depend before. At some times, people seeing us will feel that we are suffering, but we will actually not be suffering in this case. The second is, troubles show us our inadequacies and give us an opportunity to get rid of them. When we are sincere in our path, we will recognize these problems as opportunities. Lastly, problems help in strengthening our resolve and remind us that the happiness in the world is ephemeral and encourage us to go higher. Final point, it is quite possible that when in a case of a spiritual aspirant not having bad karmas, God probably may send problems his or her way purely out of his compassion, even though they don't have the bad karma to face such problems, to help them progress for the reasons that we just saw. As I said, this answer may not be comprehensive, but I think it gives us enough idea. But before I conclude this answer, let me end with a final thought. If we want to have worldly success, we must look at those ahead of us and aspire. But in spirituality, gratitude plays a very, very important role. So we must learn to look at those who are more unfortunate than us and be thankful that we have so much more than them. When in trouble, think of the thousands who are trapped in probably war zones or who woke up one day and found that the earthquake has taken away all their possessions or the flood has taken away all that they earned, or those who are struggling to find food every day. Yes, we all have problems in life, but definitely there are many, many more people who are in much, much more pain than us. If we wish to progress in spirituality, we must learn to look at such people and tell ourselves, I have much more than them. Let me be grateful. Automatically, we will be in a state where problems don't sting us like they used to before. So thank you, Sister Mohini, for that question. If you have anything more specific to ask on what I said, you're welcome to write to me again at prem@radiosci.org. Next question is from Sister Prashanti from Indiana, USA. As I mentioned, she had sent us three questions, so this is the third one. Like the earlier two, this one is in her own voice as well. So let's first listen to her question and then we'll try to answer it.
Sai Ram Prem, Radio Sai Answer Booth, addressed to a particular question a parent asked last week, and I really loved your response regards to that. It's regarding to how to help a child with boosting his self-confidence when they're blacking out with respect to exams. Very detailed manner you addressed this question, and that inspired me to ask this. I have a teenager in the house, like he's 15 now, and I'm quite inspired with the schedule and routine set up by Swami in hostel. What I understood is the importance of prayers, so I managed to teach him some important prayers. He keeps arguing, like, why am I supposed to do all these daily basis? I don't see my other Indian friends doing the same thing. So why are you kind of very hard when it comes to prayers? I convince him saying, now you might argue, but these prayers and Ganesha prayer or Medha Suktam, these kind of things, when you are stepping out of home and living outside in amidst good and bad company, I won't be with you that time, but these prayers are like, you know, Gayatri Mantra and all these things kind of are like a protective kavacha for you. They will take care. So that part I could manage and I'm doing. But I often heard Swadhyaya importance. Swami always asked us to be, youth should be inspired by biographies of people. At the end of the day, my kid likes positive thinking time. He says, I want to hear Radio Sai while when I'm sleeping. So he doesn't get much time when the school starts. He's busy with his school projects and works. So on a daily basis, he likes to hear certain things which are like positive thoughts, like food for his mind. If you could suggest some material we have in our archives, written material or audio, is it a good idea to start with dramas on great people, make him hear, or are there any inspiring information on great saints of India or great people like Vivekananda, Lincoln? I know that in universities and colleges, Swami has specifically customized the syllabus, and you have these value-based classes or moral-based classes you have, where you are taught about Gita. So at his level, he's 15 now, if there is any books you can suggest or any material in our archives, Heart to Heart or Radio Sai or the audio archives. He has heard in Morning Glory, there is a devotee, a Sai student who studied in US, who is a cop. I think, I don't know his name, but that was kind of very inspiring for him to hear. The students like him who studied here in the West, and they kind of got inspired with Balvika's programs. In day-to-day life, I heard this interview in Learning with Love Component 2, where students who are successful now, who followed this program and kind of are benefiting now, and they are able to face their day-to-day life hiccups. So if you could guide me in how to inspire him, this is the right age he's entering the youth, so I just want some guidance there, how to inspire kids with certain ideals which they need to follow. Anything, if you could help me out with this, that would be great. Thank you, Sai Ram.
Thank you, Sister Prashanti. So there we have Sister Prashanti giving me an open invitation to endorse all our programs and articles on Radio Sai and Radio Sai website. You know, the one problem with that is most of our programs are not necessarily age-specific. We do have a youth hour now called Utsaha, hosted by Bishu. We have had a lot of interviews, like the one you mentioned with an NYPD detective. And I'm sure being a regular listener of Radio Sai, you know most of our interviews and conversations. You wouldn't need me to mention them. But instead of just mentioning our programs and articles, I will talk about what is best for children of this age. And I will say that based on what I've observed, what I've heard Swami saying, and also on the basis of the nature of this age, or the age group which you mentioned. Hopefully, with this description, you will be able to choose what kind of material will be suitable to inspire your 15-year-old son. So we'll start with what is the nature of this age, that is early teenage. I'd mentioned in one of the earlier shows that this is an age of rebellion, and you have mentioned it in your question itself. But there are three other qualities of this age group which we can use to guide children of this age. One is a very, very strong sense of individuality that expresses as wanting to be different and unique. The second is ambition to do something big and simply put, to be successful. And most children have this. You know, some talk about it, but some others have it within but don't talk about it. But everybody has it. The last is a very important one, which is a very strong streak of idealism. All youth have this, but as we grow, we tend to get into our comfort zones and insecurities and don't pursue that idealism. But when young, may not be at 15, but in later teens, there is always so much adventurousness that literally feeds this idealism and keeps it alive. So now when we want to guide our children, we must use all these three aspects to inspire them to goodness. And if we analyze, we will realize that every inspiring personality that Swami spoke about would fit into this description of these three aspects. For instance, Abraham Lincoln, a typical example of someone who came from a very ordinary background and made it large. So that's a phenomenal success story. But he was not like the other presidents. He stood out because of his fight against slavery, which was prevalent in America then. And he was a man of enormous integrity, self-respect and resilience, which made him one of the greatest presidents of America. And we all know how often Swami would quote his example, because he perfectly represents this idealism, success and uniqueness in the right way or in the good way. Take the other example that Swami would give, Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose. Once again, an enormously successful person in the sense that he was one of the toppers of the ICS exams, one of the most competitive exams of his times in the pre-independence era. But he gave up after clearing that exam, the lucrative career, because he wanted to join the freedom movement. What I'm trying to convey is that each one of these personalities that Swami would quote to inspire us when we were students, though enormously successful, they chose to follow their ideals and lead a life which is much larger than just themselves and their families. See, if you can make your children read about such personalities and try to impress upon him that it is nothing great in working hard and making money, but what is special is the ability to lead a life of larger context. Swami would give us the counterexample of someone like Alexander the Great, who asked to be taken in a procession around the city after his death with his hands wide open. He wanted people to realize that the great emperor, in spite of all his conquests, is going back empty-handed. In a sense, Swami would make it sound like working, earning and providing for a family is a very, very small part of life and it does not need much effort. And that would work in two ways. One is, it first of all gives us enormous confidence, and the other is, it made us wonder, what more am I going to do with life? Also, as much as possible, expose your son to more contemporary personalities who would lead lives this way. For example, someone like Warren Buffett, one of the richest individuals in the world for many decades now, but he leads such a simple life, lives in the same house that he bought in 1957, drives a simple car, I believe, and has pledged 99% of his wealth to charity. Or for instance, I was once reading about this Indian-born American entrepreneur. His name is Manoj Bhargava. Again, a very successful multimillionaire businessman who has set aside 99% of his wealth for charity. In fact, even in charity, he wanted to stand out and be unique. So that money he has set aside for research and innovation that will help uplift life in underdeveloped countries. So these people are constantly trying to live a life that is larger than themselves and also stand out of the crowd. So even in charity, they are asking how to make contributions that really benefit people and that are different. So make them read or listen to stories of men who stood for integrity even when they faced with problems. Swami would tell us how Mahatma Gandhi was so inspired after he saw the drama on Satya Harishchandra, one of the greatest examples for that, and how that drama had a lifelong impact on him. Now, is there anything in Radio Sai archives that can be used? We ran a series on the website called A Matter of Conscience. We also have a radio adaptation of that. That series talks about Swami's devotees and students who stuck to their values under testing times. That is one I would suggest. There are a few episodes of a series called Inspired Lives of devotees who took a different path to lead lives of a larger context, as I told. You could explore that. But let me make two points about reading such content. And this is for all people who seek inspiration in such biographies and life experiences of others, not merely children of 15 or of the teenage. First thing, Swami would inspire goodness in us, definitely by quoting the lives of many such exemplary people. But Swami would never allow us to make any of them our heroes. Because all of us, even the best amongst us, have some flaw or the other. It is very difficult to keep any personality as an absolute leader or an absolute hero. So in many ways, I have seen Swami discouraging taking any one person as our hero. You know, Swami would speak of only avatars like Rama, Krishna, or Swami himself as absolute personalities whom we can be inspired by in all the aspects. So when it comes to others, we must always use our discrimination. Same is the case even when we look up to other Sai devotees. You know, we can be inspired by their devotion and even follow their ways to an extent, but we must know where to stop. So eventually, see if you can make Swami as your son's inspiration. This is if he has an inclination towards Swami, of course. I'm not talking about any kind of force. This is a very, very important point because as parents and elders, we teach our children to worship Swami. But we don't teach them enough to look at Swami as an example, as a person whose ways are to be emulated. But as I said, this comes much later. First, start with normal people, if possible, contemporary personalities who embody success, idealism, and uniqueness. The second point of caution I wanted to mention is something that Swami himself had told one of the Sai youth. When this youth asked Swami, "Swami, what kind of books should we read?" Swami told him, "Read books whose authors are men and women of character." Swami was not referring to merely autobiographies. He was referring to all kinds of books, especially books that are motivational and character development content, right? So don't just see if the content is good. See even if the authors have good characters. That's what Swami said. This, I feel, is again a very important instruction, not just for youngsters, but for all of us. See, we live in a world where if success and fame speaks, we all listen. If a popular actor comments on anything, he may not even be remotely connected to that theme which he's talking of commenting about. But we consume it like it's Veda, and this is such a dangerous attitude. So wise people will avoid it, of course. But let us say that we are reading a book on macroeconomics, and it's written by a person who is an expert in that field. But if this author is not a morally sound person, his views, however academically right, will be influenced by his lack of ethics. Let's say a very successful businessman who happens to be immoral or corrupt writes about managing a company. Obviously, his views will endorse, at least to some extent, compromising values. Let me try to analyze that a little more. See, truly speaking, most often, there is no clear reason why one becomes more successful than the others. Yes, there are some general ingredients like hard work, sincerity, and so on. But other than that, there is no one absolute way to success. But when a person becomes successful, we tend to think that whatever he or she has done to become successful is worthy of complete emulation. In other words, success literally becomes like a loudspeaker. It amplifies the views of whoever holds it. So a morally sound person holding the loudspeaker of success voices moral ideas. And an immoral person holding the loudspeaker of success voices immoral ideas. That is why this advice that Swami gives, read books of authors who are themselves people of character, is very important. So, Sister Prashanthi, I don't know how you can convey this to your son. Maybe when he grows up a little older, you can try. But I feel this one tip, which all of us must keep in mind, is what Swami told that Sai youth. Apart from personalities, idealism, and success, there's one more topic that begins to make more sense in this age, that begins to make children curious and also catches their attention, and that is love. This is the age when children start forming their impressions about what love is. So it is a good idea to talk to them about it, I feel. There are two ways this will help. One is you will catch their attention and you will be able to interact with them in a free and friendly manner when you get free and friendly manner after you get their attention. Because, you know, especially in Western cultures, by this age, parents must start treating their children like friends. But not completely, but at least a little bit of friendliness should start entering parental care by the time the children are about 14 or 15. The second reason is you can explain to them what true love is. And that true love is not skin deep or dependent on physical beauty. That way, you also lay a clear foundation for this concept of love. They will definitely learn from their own ideas as they grow and go through life experiences. But parents talking about it will certainly give them a mature foundation for the concept. So let me try and summarize what I've said as a response to that question from Sister Prashanti. There are three qualities in this teenage that can be leveraged to guide them. One is the desire to stand out unique. The second is aspirations and dreams to be successful. And the third is the streak of idealism. So see if you can expose them to literature and media about personalities that stand for all these three qualities. And the personalities must be successful, but at the same time, living lives larger, with a focus larger than just themselves and their families. The more contemporary the examples, the better. Of course, if the children have an interest in mythology, or you have planted that liking for it much earlier in their life, then you can have them read about characters from the epics too. Then I spoke about an advice that Swami would give. Read books written by authors who themselves are men and women of character. I explain how we tend to accept whatever is spoken from the platform of success. So it is very important to read books by moral people who have become successful. Lastly, I said it's a good idea to speak to children in this age of around 15 about the concept of love and try to help them see what is true love and how it is special. So that, my dear listeners, is my answer to the question. I hope it answered you, Sister Prashanti, and I also hope some of the parents and even youngsters benefited from that answer. So with that, it's time to wrap up this show, dear listeners. Thank you for joining me this morning, and once again, warm Navratri greetings to all of you. If you have a question on practical spirituality, you can send it directly to me by mailing me at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. I would really appreciate it if you can record your question and send it across. Or if you wish to remain anonymous and don't want your name to be read out, let me know. We'll do that too. I'll meet you all at 12:30 for the afternoon satsang with Arvind, but we'll meet you at 11 a.m. next week for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. Most humbly offer this show at Swami's lotus feet. Jai Sai Ram.
Bye.